Thanksgiving is really one of the most wonderful holidays that we have and that we share as Americans. It's much more than sales in department stores. It's much more than the opening of the commercial season for Christmas, which apparently doesn't wait for Thanksgiving anymore. It's more than being overstuffed with turkey and cranberry and seeing a couple of football games on television. And maybe it's even more than family, though that's what's central to most of us. It's a reminder. Most profoundly, it is a reminder of hopes and promises broken and promises kept and promises that can still be kept about how we live with one another in this country and in this world. Our pilgrim ancestors, and the pilgrims were our ancestors wherever our biological ancestors were when they came over, or whenever our biological ancestors came over. As Americans, the pilgrims are our spiritual ancestors. They came to this country, as we all know, to escape religious persecution. They found something that was more important than comfort, which was the authenticity of their view and their vision of what their religion was about. It was worth risking their lives for. It was worth losing their lives for. There was something more valuable than comfort and life to them, and that was freedom to worship as they chose. They escaped England and the control of either a pope or a king, the ermine, the stoles, the rich robes of the high church and clergy, and the ostentation, and they looked to follow the example of what they read as the simple and generous life of Jesus that they read in the Gospels. And they read their Hebrew scriptures in Hebrew, and they read their Gospels in Greek. They were a literate and literary and bright and educated people. And they came to this land, to these inhospitable shores of New England, in search of a place where they could be free. They were also human beings. And human beings have a great deal of difficulty sometimes remembering the freedom and the dignity that others who differ are entitled to also. And the church that they ran from, they felt hostility towards. And others who came to this country seeking freedom did not always get along. And it took our founders to whom much lip service is paid right now, who had real wisdom and real historic memory and understood and remembered how Europe had torn itself apart through sectarian violence. How not simply when Henry VIII created his own church in England, and not simply when Luther spearheaded the Protestant Reformation, or Miguel Servetus wrote on the errors of the Trinity, or Socinius, or any of those other Protestants. It wasn't any one of them. It was what our founders remembered that Europe did to itself when crown and God were united and wars became not simply wars of aggression but became holy wars. And every war became a holy war, whether it was a crusade across the continent and across the sea to the Middle East, or whether it was a war between Protestant and Catholic in England and in Scotland. People were burned, people were killed, countries and families torn apart because there was an alliance of God and governance. And our founders, who did not all share the same religion, were wise enough to try to build into our Constitution and into the Bill of Rights the doctrine of the separation of church and state so that we would not continue, repeat, and perpetuate to the edge of doom these terrible internecine wars over theological trivia. Our founders did not want our country ruled by the divine right of kings. They wanted our country governed for them by men, for us by men and women, who, while they might take inspiration from their religions, they might take inspiration from prayer, they might ask for guidance, they would use the language of faith, but when they voted in a House, in a Senate, when they created policy, it was in their name, their responsibility, and the idea of divine right was written intentionally out of our Constitution. We have a right of freedom of religion as well as freedom from religion. Freedom from religion when it becomes incarnate in a state and in government. One of the hardest things in the world is for God to compromise and for God's messengers and agents to compromise, and politics is the art of compromise. Today, at this Thanksgiving, we stand on a brink where we can learn some good lessons of history from some of the tragedies of history. We stand on the brink where wars and conflict can become wars and conflict between religions and cultures and civilizations and be rationalized as holy, or we can see them as conflicts between human beings, guided, misguided, good, evil, but not sortable simply by race, culture, or religion. I'm sure that many of the millennialists and the people waiting for the Great Urban Renewal Project that the Second Coming is supposed to be are very excited by where this cultural conflict is centering right now, not that far from the plains of Armageddon. And I couldn't help but think of Matthew Arnold's poem as I watched what has been going on as the war has escalated and the chaos has become more chaotic and more violent every day. Matthew Arnold wrote in his poem Dover Beach, "And we are here as on a darkling plain, swept with confused alarms of struggle and flight, where ignorant armies clash by night." Our founders stepped back from the brink. They stepped back from the brink of creating a state religion and making one religion the religion of America. Our founders stepped back from the brink, and they allowed us to attempt, even when we did wrong, not to do that wrong in God's name, but in the name of the state and in the name of the people. It is easy, as the Bible says, to see the mote in someone else's eye and not the log in one's own. Americans are pretty good at seeing those barbaric Indians who took scalps and not those barbaric non-Indians who took Indian land and gave them blankets that had smallpox on them. Just as we are right to see the barbarism of people who would behead women and innocents and play by rules unfamiliar to us, that are barbaric, and I do not justify the barbarism, but we don't see also the tremendous damage that our wars create and how this interplay of violence escalates itself. And it is not holy war. And it is not holy violence. And it is not a sanctification of anything. And our nation was built on that idea. The world can step back from this brink, or we can go over into a clash of civilizations, forget the positive lessons of what the pilgrims promised but could not keep, forget the positive lessons of what the founders wrote into our foundational documents. We can remember that George Washington's God and Thomas Jefferson's God were not very similar, but they got along. We can remember that Thomas Jefferson's God and John Adams' God, two good Unitarians, loosely, not loosely good, loosely Unitarian, two good Unitarians didn't get along. They cordially detested each other. But the operative word is cordially. And one of the examples from our founders is that differences in theology and religion do not have to drive us apart, and similarities of religion do not mean that we like each other. We need to learn from that. We need to learn from all of the breads. We need to learn that the lights of the Enlightenment can go out in the passions of holy war when God and war are aligned and every plane becomes a darkling plane and every army an army of ignorance. It is our job as human beings to keep the lights on. It's our job as human beings to try to see the humanity in others who are different from ourselves. It is not our job to create moral equivalence. It is not our job to say everything's okay and it's just a matter of viewpoint. We can have positions and they can be passionate, but they are ours and should be tempered by some humility and a good deal of respect for the common humanity which, like the flour in the bread, is part of our human condition. That's what we remember and celebrate and hope for and commit ourselves to creating more of at this Thanksgiving.